Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's primary election day in Ohio. About 600 state and local issues are on the ballots across the state, and voters also will decide among same-party candidates for the Ohio General Assembly and Congress. Primaries typically don't inspire the same fanfare or voter turnout as general elections, but they do determine what's on the November ballot. Despite low turnout rates, many states, including Ohio, still have complicated primary systems and rules about party affiliation and voter eligibility. Today, we're going to talk about whether the primaries matter, to what extent they do, and take a closer look at how Tea Party-identified candidates are using the primaries to influence the Republican Party in Ohio. Joining us now to get started is University of Akron political scientist John Green. Welcome back to the show, John.
Oh, it's great to be with you.
Is there a what you would describe as a typical state primary system in the United States?
Oh, no, there really isn't. One of the interesting things about the primary systems is they vary enormously from state to state. And this had a lot to do with how the primary developed. Of course, a primary is an election to choose the nominees for the general election. And they developed in different states in response to different kinds of problems. So we have a, you know, for historical reasons, a wide variety of primary systems.
Has there ever been any pushback on that score with the states having such different systems? It could affect the ultimate outcome?
You know, there has been some pushback, and most of it came in presidential elections. You know, the primary we're having today is a state and local primary here in Ohio, and other states are having their primaries. But an attempt to move towards a uniform system really came from the presidential system. And, of course, there, it's not really the direct choice of presidential candidates, not presidential nominees. It's the choice of delegates to the national convention. And it's interesting because, particularly in the Democratic Party, and to some extent in the Republican Party, too, the national committees of the two parties have tried to establish some uniformity on dates, times, methods of selections, who is eligible. But, you know, there still remains a remarkable amount of diversity across the states.
There wasn't always a primary system, right?
No, there really wasn't. Historically, what happened was the parties nominated their own candidates through their own private meetings. And we see some examples of that still. For instance, the Iowa caucuses that we read about every presidential year, that's an example of that older system. And lots of parties use conventions at the state level or even at the local level to nominate their candidates. And what developed in the early 20th century was a reaction against those systems because there was a feeling that party leaders, you know, the bosses of the past who ran the machines that were often seen as corrupt, the idea was to substitute voters. And initially it was party voters, you know, Democrats, Republicans, progressives, populists, you know, whatever the party might be. So you would have an election where the voters would actually pick the nominees, not the party leaders. And so all the original primaries were what we would call today a closed primary. You have to be registered in the party whose candidates you want to vote for. And many states still have closed primaries. They have party registration. Only Democrats can vote in Democratic primaries, only Republicans and Republican primaries. But since that time, over the last 100 years or so, we've seen a great deal of diversity in primaries so that we don't in every state have a closed primary. Some states have an open primary where anybody can come and vote for anybody. You can only vote once, but you know the process is very, very open. Here in Ohio, we have a pretty complicated system. It's a mix of the two. It's oftentimes called a semi-open primary. Mm-hmm. And what happens in Ohio is when you go to vote, you can choose a party ballot. All the parties will have ballots, particularly the Democrats and the Republicans. Or if you don't want to vote in a party primary, you can choose a nonpartisan ballot. Say if you wanted to vote for a tax levy or something like that that's not connected to parties. But the expectation in Ohio is that, you know, Republicans will vote in Republican primaries and Democrats in Democratic primaries. But if you decide you want to switch, you can do it at the polling place, and you just have to fill out a form saying that you support the principles of the party whose primary you want to vote in. So the Ohio system is a mixed system and kind of complicated. And not as straightforward as an either an open or a closed primary would be.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is John Green. He's director of the Institute of Applied Politics at the University of Akron. We're talking about the primary system in Ohio and across the country. It differs greatly between the states. If you have a question or comment for John Green, you're welcome. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. In Ohio, all things being equal, the choices are just Democrat or Republican, right?
Yeah, they are. And there's been some effort of some of the minor parties. And here in Ohio, like across the country, there are minor parties. This, by the way, the designation minor in nature has to do with the percentage of the vote people get, that party's candidates get in a general election. But minor parties usually nominate their candidates by petition. They file petitions to be on the ballot. But it is possible for minor parties to have primaries. There's a controversy this year because mm-hmm. the Libertarian Party wanted to have their candidate. They wanted to have a Libertarian ballot. And for technical reasons, they were excluded. And in fact, even up through yesterday, there were lawyers in court trying to restore the Libertarian ballot for today's election.
Some people are predicting that this primary election will see the lowest voter turnout in 4 years. That's not surprising.
No, it's really not, because of the lack of statewide contested races. We'd be seeing much higher turnout, say, if there were strong primary challenges to Governor Kasich or to the presumptive Democratic nominee, Ed Fitzgerald. We really don't have that. And typically, primaries are driven by the top of the ticket. And of course, presidential years are the ones that tend to have the highest turnout for that reason. So what we're going to see across Ohio is basically local issues, state legislative races, maybe a couple of congressional primaries. So in a particular area, there may be a contested race, but there's nothing statewide that will pull people out to vote.
What has the impact of gerrymandering, in other words, rigging the districts so that they lean one way or the other, had on the primary system in Ohio? Or what impact has it had on voter turnout?
Well, it's interesting because one of the things that happens in a gerrymandered system, and, Democrats and Republicans do it, and all states tend to have gerrymandered districts, is that the primary becomes really very important. For instance, if you're in a solidly Democratic district where the Democratic nominee is very likely to win the general election just because of the nature of the district, then the real competition's in the Democratic primary. And you can say exactly the same thing on the Republican side. If you have a very solidly Republican district, then the primary becomes between the different kinds of Republicans. And many scholars have argued that if you combine the primary system with gerrymandering, you can produce a lot of polarization because the candidates, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, tend to get pulled away from the center so that they can win the primary. And then they have no incentive to move back to the center afterwards because their district basically favors their party. So, a lot of scholars have argued that this is not the only cause of polarization, but it does have this effect of moving Republicans farther to the right and Democrats farther to the left. And of course, that contributes to gridlock in government and so forth.
Do we have any idea to what extent people switch back and forth to influence primaries?
Well, there's a lot of worry, and there's a technical term for it. It's called raiding, where Democrats would go into a Republican primary to try to nominate the weakest of the Republican field or vice versa. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of concern about it, and people, sometimes there's public efforts to encourage that kind of thing, particularly if one party has a heated primary and maybe the other one doesn't. But, it turns out that these raiding expeditions turn out to be very difficult to organize. One of the big problems we have politically in the U.S. is, as we've been discussing, relatively low turnout anyway. Mm-hmm. So to motivate people to do something complicated like vote in the other party for strategic purposes turns out to be very hard to do. So, while certainly that motivation exists and people do worry about it, it's usually not as big of a problem as people fear.
There have been some changes to California's primary voting system. They switched to a top two system in 2012. How does that system work?
Well, it's really interesting. The broad term for what has been done in California is called a blanket primary.
Okay.
And, you know, here in Ohio and in most states, we have partisan primaries. You know, Democrats and Republicans have separate ballots. But out in California, they're going to have all the candidates, you know, Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, or whatever, run on the same ballot. So when a voter goes to the polls, they can choose any of the candidates from any of the parties that they want to vote for. And then the candidates that the top two vote getters, they don't have to have a majority, but the top two vote getters then go on the ballot for the general election. So you could conceivably have two Democrats in the general election, or two Republicans, or a Republican and a Libertarian, or a Democrat and a Green Party candidate. You know, in most cases, it turns out to be a Republican and a Democrat. But the idea of the blanket primary is to give voters a chance to choose not just along party lines, but according to people's issue positions and their background. So it's really, scholars are watching the California system, because there is an argument that it might reduce that polarizing effect of primaries when you have gerrymandering.
Now, do you have to register with a party to vote in California?
California has a party registration.
Okay.
But in the blanket primary, everybody votes on the same ballot. So
okay.
It doesn't matter for primary purposes what party you belong to. Now, there is one exception in California, and that's presidential primaries. You know, they kept those, you know, separate from state elections.
The national races would be
are still partisan. But you know, there's a version of this that's existed for many years in Louisiana. And the term they have it for there is the jungle primary. And it's also, you know, everybody's on the same ballot, Democrat, Republican, and so forth. But that election actually occurs on the national election day, you know, November 5th or November 4th, whatever that would be. And if a candidate gets a majority, they win. They're the elected representative or a governor or whatever. But if nobody gets a majority, then a month later, Louisiana has a runoff so that, you know, whoever ultimately wins that seat has a majority of the vote cast. So that's a little bit different take on the blanket primary.
A new report found that California's system didn't necessarily get more or many more total voters out to the polls, but it did encourage more independents to vote. Is that what you're talking about as far as less polarizing?
Yeah, the idea is that if you had independents, perhaps also Democrats and Republicans that are not as ideologically driven, that they would come out and so their weight would be felt in the primary, you know, their votes, their preference would be felt in the primary and not just in the general election. And the complaint in California and other states is, you know, you end up with, say, a very liberal Democrat and a very conservative Republican, and your independent moderate voters really feel like they have no choice. Mm-hmm. And so they many of them don't vote because they don't feel that they have an option. So the idea with the blanket primary is those voters can weigh in early so that they'll be presumably better choices in the fall.
So to what extent then, I mean, when you're getting those independent voters out to the polls who wouldn't have gone there otherwise, that means they're also voting on ballot issues, perhaps, that they wouldn't have voted on.
Yeah, and it could change the nature of the electorate considerably. And in a state like California, where it's relatively easy to get an issue on the ballot, and as you may know, they have lots and lots of issues every election.
Yes,
in
they kind of broke the mold on that.
Yeah, they sure did. And so there was some real concern, you know, primary elections aside, that some of these state ballot issues were being passed with a very restricted electorate, where you didn't have a lot of independent voters, you know, voting on the levies or the state constitutional amendments or whatever the ballot issue might be. And so one potential positive product, if you will, of the blanket primary is for those types of issues, you'd have a much broader electorate. Now, in Ohio, that's not as big of a problem because if you didn't want to vote in a party primary, you could request an issues-only ballot,
mm-hmm.
a nonpartisan ballot. So suppose there was a big school levy that you cared about, you didn't care about the other races, you could still cast a ballot. That's not available in California, so the blanket primary means that is a way to get independents involved.
But you don't walk away from a blanket primary being labeled one party or the other. However, you do have to register. But there's independents. Is there like an independent registration? Does it work that way?
Yeah, in many states that have party registration, one can register as an independent. Now, this is one way that Ohio is kind of peculiar. Several decades ago, Ohio gave up party registration. So if you go register to vote in Ohio, you're not labeled anything.
Mm-hmm.
But where the labeling comes from, whether you're labeled a Democrat or Republican or whatever, is which primary you vote in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a kind of behavioral measure of partisanship. So, you know, if an independent today decided that they want to get involved in a Democratic or a Republican primary, they could go to the polls, they could get ask for a party ballot, sign their form, and then subsequent to this election, they would be officially labeled as a member of the party whose primary they voted in, which is a little wrinkle in Ohio law that we don't see in very many states.
My guest is John Green. He from the University of Akron. We will return to our conversation about primaries. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm Ann Fisher. It's primary election day in Ohio. At this point, 2 years ago, Ohio television stations had aired more than 250,000 political ads. Of course, that was a presidential election year. Political ads aired in Ohio now number one-tenth that number at this point this year. And the only political ad that's received much notice isn't even on television. It's a web-only spot produced for Tea Party candidate John Winteregg, who is challenging House Speaker John Boehner for his 8th congressional district seat, a rock-solid Republican district in western Ohio. Winteregg's message is a spoof on a Cialis commercial. Here's a bit of it.
You make a great team. It's been that way since the day you met. But your erectile dysfunction? It could be a question of blood flow. Sometimes when a politician has been in D.C. too long, it goes to his head, and he just can't seem to get the job done.
The tone of the ad cost Winteregg an adjunct teaching job at a local private college, but it earned him a smidgen of national press. Still with us is University of Akron political scientist John Green by phone. And joining us also by phone is the executive director of the Portage County Tea Party, Tom Zawatowski. Welcome back, Tom.
Hey, Ann. Great to be with you. John, good to be with you, too, bud.
Good to be with you, too. Thanks.
Last election, John Boehner won more than 80% of the vote in his district. That's pretty typical. It's, like I said, it's a rock-solid Republican district, pretty much always has been. What's the point of a challenge by someone like Winteregg, Tom?
Well, you know, there's just a lot of frustration among conservatives, not just here in the state of Ohio, but nationally, about Speaker Boehner. He's kind of the lightning rod for anything that anybody thinks is wrong with what's going on in Washington. And so, you know, it's an act of you know, really defiance and really, you know, frustration with the system. What I think is interesting to me is I was really surprised at how John Boehner's polling numbers are so low, and that in a district that's been very supportive of him, you know, there really seemed to be some people who wanted to see a change there. So, you know, JD's doing the thing he can do best, and, you know, that's put his name on the ballot and give people a choice. And I think, you know, in your last segment, John, and you had a good discussion about, you know, that's part of the problem with our electoral process is there isn't enough choice.
John Green, how often does somebody like John Boehner get unseated in a primary like this? It's extremely rare, not to mention the fact that he's Speaker of the House.
Well, in the House of Representatives, it's very rare for leaders to be defeated. And part of that has to do with what we were talking about in the previous segment, which is the way that district lines are drawn. And leaders of both parties tend to come from very solid districts from the point of view of their party. There is a little bit different, though, in the Senate. In the Senate, the majority and minority leaders often face very strong challenges. For instance, we saw in a previous election, Senator Harry Reid, the Democratic leader from Nevada, faced a very tough re-election. He was able to prevail, but it was much closer than you might otherwise have thought. And Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader in Kentucky, is facing a very similar situation this time. And I think that's because states are much more diverse.
In other words, there are statewide elections for U.S. Senate.
Exactly. So mm-hmm. you don't have the kind of impact of gerrymandering. So a little bit difference in the House than the Senate.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the primary system in Ohio and around the country. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Do you like Ohio's primary system? Give us a call. It's described as a semi-closed partisan primary, right, John Green?
I think it's actually a semi-open. But
semi-open, okay.
The definitions are a little bit complicated.
Okay. All right. Semi-open. House Speaker Boehner recently made light of his colleague's inability to pass immigration reform. We have a clip of that. Let's listen.
The appetite amongst my colleagues for doing this is not real good. And this guy's back here with a camera. But here's the attitude. Oh, don't make me do this. Oh, this is too hard. You should hear him.
That is unusual for a couple reasons. That the tone of it is very unusual in public. Even he acknowledged there's a guy with a camera in the back of the room, and indeed there was. You could see this on the internet. But also that even John Boehner's doing much campaigning in his home district, right, John Green? I mean, that's he doesn't usually have to spend that much time or money.
Oh, not at all. In fact, I remember just the other day talking to some journalists from that district who, in their lifetime, had, you know, some of them are younger journalists, but they had never seen a John Boehner ad at any
right.
time because, you know, he gets reelected by large margins. But I think that's a testament to how influential, at least in symbolic terms, the challenge is from the candidates in the Republican primary. You know, this is potentially embarrassing to the speaker if his margins end up being low. And, of course, that could have some, you know, probably win, but that could have some influence on his ability to lead in the House of Representatives. So I think it's a testament to the fact that this challenge may be symbolic, but it's getting a lot of attention.
And if I could jump in there,
sure.
I'd like to do that because, you know, I think this is really an important primary in Ohio because I think something very dramatic is going on. And that is this whole idea of having challenges in the primary. The liberty groups around the state got together last December and said, how do we impact this? In other words, you know, we're frustrated. You know, people are not happy with the process. So how can we do something about that? And we came up with a very simple program, and it was called Just Put Your Name on the Ballot. And we went out and we said to people, we know we're not professional politicians. We know we don't have millions of dollars. We know that we don't have the campaign skills and things that we need to develop. So let's take the first step. Let's just put our name on the ballot and give people a choice and see what happens. And what's been amazing, John and Ann, is that we're having much more effect than we ever thought. Because in our polling, when we're looking at, you know, we have challengers in you know, like 14 of the out of 18 House races. We have four that are unopposed. We've got Senate challengers, Ohio Senate challengers. And when we're doing the polling, only two incumbent Republicans polled over 50%. Most of them were 35 or lower. And that's simply because we finally gave people a choice, which both parties, John, as you know, worked very hard to make sure there are no challengers.
Yeah.
And I think there's going to be surprising results simply because that happened.
There were changes to the laws regarding minor parties on the ballot. John Green, did it make that much of a difference?
Well, certainly in an immediate term, it made a difference to the Libertarians because their
right.
candidate's not on the ballot today. But, you know, because we have a lot of discontent and a lot of close elections between the major party candidates, minor party candidates of all kinds have an opportunity to impact the election. Not they won't necessarily win in many cases, but they might determine who would win. And so on the Democratic side, candidates have an incentive to try to deal, say, with the Green Party candidates who might be on the ballot, and on the Republican side, perhaps to deal with Libertarians and other minor party candidates. So, you know, in the general election, it could have an impact if those candidates are restricted from being on the ballot.
Tom Zawistowski, you referred to liberty groups around the state. To what extent is it a handicap that you're referring to liberty groups and not a Liberty Party or a Tea Party? There's not an organized party like there is the Republicans and the Democrats.
Well, I'm glad you point that out, because so many people think, because the name Tea Party has the word party, that we're a political party. And as you know, we're not. And so it is a little bit different. But you know, we really haven't given up on our political system. We're just trying to find a way to work within it. And as John, you know, explained so clearly, it's really a pretty confusing process. It's really, you know, unfortunately too difficult for the common citizen to participate. So you know, it's not a handicap from the standpoint of we're not a party. It's a handicap from the standpoint of the parties make it difficult for you to be part of their party. And so, for instance, you know, in the Republican Party, Ohio Republican Party, they actually have a bylaw that says they endorse in the primaries, mm-hmm. and they can only endorse incumbents. That's not a very open way to have people participate in your primaries. And so, you know, that's one of the things, the obstacles that we face and that we think would help everybody if the primary was really that place where, you know, you could have a lot of voices and people could choose. But that's not the way it's set up.
I'm going to take a call from Paul. He wants to talk about gerrymandering. But before I go to him, Tom Zabostowski, what about the gerrymandering process? What about changing that to begin with and to because that's what leads to a lot of the polarization in the first place.
Yeah, we're all for that in the liberty movement. You know, we think, you know, you know, the district should be along county lines or, you know, some group of counties or something like that. You know, it just really is intended to help the parties, not help the people.
Paul in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Paul.
Good morning. Yes, there's I think it's Iowa that has some different way of figuring out at least congressional districts. So it's a nonpartisan kind of thing, and you don't have this craziness every 10 years of battling over, you know, party, basically party boundaries and trying to set it up to either or's advantage. And there also, I think there was another suggestion, or maybe some state was considering doing it, of having a more of an election for congressional candidates that weren't so tied to the district. What does the professor think about that?
John Green?
Well, Iowa does have a different system than other states. They have an independent commission which draws the district lines. And they also have some special rules in Iowa that they have to, as much as possible, keep county boundaries intact. Now, in a big state like Ohio, that might be harder to do than out in Iowa, but there are some different procedures for doing this than the typical partisan gerrymandering.
I wanted to talk about independent voters right now. Apparently, they number about 42%, or they represent about 42% of the voters in Ohio. Is that pretty typical, John Green?
Well, you know, the number of independent voters has been increasing steadily for the last several decades. And, you know, there is some dispute over exactly how do you measure independent voters, but it is a very large group. And in Ohio and in many other states, the independents outnumber the Democrats and the Republicans, often by substantial margins. And now, some of that, those independents tend to cast a fairly consistent partisan vote, either Democratic or Republican, because mm-hmm. of the issue positions they have. But still, you know, one of the problems that the major party face is this steady increase in people who don't want to affiliate with the Democrats or the Republicans.
Tom Zawistowski, why keep going for the Republican primaries? Why not work at creating your own party? Why go after the Republicans?
Well, you know, we're really not going after the Republicans. We're philosophically, ideologically, you know, more in line with the Republicans. And we do have, quite frankly, several people running in the Democratic primaries today. And you know, we are not against any of those parties. We want people to participate in the process. But to build a third party is a huge challenge. But as John points out, when you have this huge group of people that far outnumbers either party, you know, rejecting what the parties have mm-hmm. to offer, that's very attractive to us. And if we don't finally find a way to be invited into the process and participate on an equal basis, I think you will see a third party emerge, and I think you would see the Tea Party be a big part of that.
When I hear John Boehner, you know, make fun of his colleagues in Congress, when you hear other top Republicans saying, enough, I'm not going to listen to them anymore, what are you getting from that at this point, Tom Zawistowski? It seemed like there was a tipping point where Tea Party candidates, Liberty candidates were gaining steam, and their issues were getting a lot more notice than they are now.
Well, I would refute that. I think our issues are getting plenty of notice now, and you know, if we weren't being affected, they wouldn't keep talking about us. What's happened, and I think you're right, there was an important moment in time, and that was when Ted Cruz took to the floor of the Senate and filibustered the continuing resolution and used Obamacare as the reason to do that. At that point, the Republican establishment, led by John McCain and Lindsey Graham in the Senate, basically said, we've had enough. We're going to go to war with these conservative people who back Cruz and Paul and Rubio and some of those people. And since that point, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the Main Street partners under Steve LaTourette have been just in your face. I mean, we intend to defeat every Tea Party candidate. Mitch McConnell says, you know, we expect not one Tea Party candidate to win. Well, they're already 0-1 because Cowan won in Florida. And he's a Tea Party guy who's going to be in the Ohio and the U.S. House of Representatives. And we think you'll see more of that today and tomorrow. They're threatened. The establishment is threatened because they are used to a certain way of business being done where the special interests have a bigger seat at the table than the people. We are trying to change that. And what we're trying to prove today in Ohio is that you don't need big money to win. We think that's a canard. We think the special interests try to make it look that way to discourage people from running and participating. And so if we can win some seats today in Ohio, we're going to prove that you just need the people to participate. You don't need to buy the election.
John Green, is there any evidence that the Tea Party is making the sort of headway that Tom Zawistowski describes there?
Well, if you look at the number of candidates that have been fielded and the amount of attention that they have received, I think you can make a case that they're certainly, those groups are certainly having an impact. Perhaps, you know, a little bit less so in Ohio than some other states.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that has a lot to do with the primary processes that we were talking about. And in other states, it's a lot easier for challengers to get on the ballot. It's also easier for voters to cast a broader set of decisions on election day.
Well, Tom Zawistowski, I have to say goodbye to you, but I thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, I'm always glad to be on. And John, you know, thank you for joining us, too. It's been a great conversation.
Thanks. Coming up, we continue our conversation about primaries in Ohio. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's Election Day, and today voters are deciding on some important state and local issues. They'll also choose which candidates make it onto the November ballot. We're talking today about primary elections across Ohio and across the nation, especially about GOP candidates and their Tea Party challengers. Still with us is University of Akron political scientist John Green. John, thanks again for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And joining us in the studio now is Ohio Republican Party Chairman Matt Borges. Welcome to the show.
I am. I
should say welcome back. Matt, what do you say to Republicans like Tom Zawistowski, who was with us a little earlier, who say they're sick of the party's inaction and feel like it's time for some new blood and that this is the way it should work, this is the way primaries should be run, they should have this kind of opposition?
Well, I guess I'm not really completely sure which part of lower taxes and 250,000 more jobs and balanced budgets, seem to have him upset about what's happening at the state level.
So what do you think it is?
Oh,
he says there's a culture difference. The culture of the insiders. And
well, I think it's a number of things. First, you've certainly got an element of people out there across, you know, the spectrum who are frustrated with, you know, the system, with government getting too big, with mortgaging our children, our grandchildren's futures. The real question is who represents the right path back? And there's no question in my mind that that's the Republican Party and the Republican candidates. And it's demonstrably so, as we, you know, when we lose these elections, especially on the national level, mm-hmm. you know, Barack Obama was elected president for a while. He had Democratic majorities in both chambers, you know, of the United States House and Senate. And I mean, look what they did. I mean, they were going about fundamentally changing this country. And so, you know, we began to, you know, slow the locomotive down by electing a majority in the U.S. House. And of course, at the state level, in states like Ohio, with John Kasich and the Republican legislature.
Pretty much, I mean, dominating. I mean, it's clearly for
a long
time
look at the results.
Now.
I mean, if they would only figure out what low taxes and balanced budgets would do at the federal level, the Democrats in Washington could only figure out what's happening, you know, in Ohio, where Republican and conservative, you know, motives are really driving the agenda. Boy, wouldn't it be wonderful to see what we could do at the national level?
John Green, to hear Matt talk, you think, okay, what is the problem? Why are there opponents? So where are they coming from? What are the Republicans doing wrong?
Well, you know, I think there's a couple of different things. I think that many of the Tea Party and Liberty Group activists are, while conservative and certainly would agree with many of the things that Matt just mentioned, they tend to be a notch farther to the right. They would share with many Republicans a suspicion of government, but the suspicion is simply much deeper in their circles. And you know, some of the pragmatism that elected officials, Republicans or Democrats, have to engage in order to accomplish things can become very problematic for people with very, very intense views, you know, whether they're on the left or the right. But I think another area is the issue of social policy, where, of course, we do have lots of moderate Republicans who, say, might be pro-choice on abortion, whereas many, many of these activists are on the pro-life side. And, you know, you can make an argument that, you know, the Republican Party as a whole tends to be on the pro-life side, but perhaps not as far as some of these activists would be. So I think what we've got here is, you know, a difference of opinion that's pretty significant, but among conservatives and Republicans.
Right. It's conservatives and Republicans. Matt Borges, I remember the days of the big tent and all that kind of stuff, or the big umbrella or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Does it feel that big, or is the party becoming narrowed by these kinds of primary challenges, by the criticism from people like Tom Sawastowski, who says, no, I want to be in the Republican Party.
Yeah,
that's the one I identify with.
I think that's one of the most important points, you know, to come away with. First of all, the Tea Party is not our enemy. You know, these are folks, like I said, like-minded, smaller government, lower taxes, the things that Republicans are fighting for. And to the extent that we need to do a better job of making sure that they understand what our message is all about and harnessing a lot of the frustrations that I think are really more frustrations toward the government overall, certainly the Democrats and the way that they've been, you know, running the country and at the federal level. And for a short period of time, you know, at the state level, when Ted Strickland was governor of Ohio and 350,000 jobs fled the state and there was an $8 billion budget deficit. I mean, we can go through those, you know, all day long. It has been those Republican principles that have helped draw folks back. That doesn't mean that there isn't still an element of folks who are still very frustrated that would like to see maybe, you know, more done. On the federal level, you know, we've controlled, you know, in Barack Obama's first term, Republicans controlled one half of one third of the government. So, you know, we did what we could to stand in the way of an extraordinarily liberal agenda. And I'm proud of John Boehner, and I'm proud of Republicans for standing up to, you know, the things that they saw that they thought were wrong.
John Green mentioned earlier that some of the reporters he's talked to in the west side of the state said they've never seen a John Boehner commercial before this primary challenge. Is that good for voters that someone like John Boehner doesn't barely have to show up and get reelected year after year after year?
You know, it's an interesting dynamic for me. You know, we live in Ohio. We're the epicenter of, you know, of national and international politics every 4 years.
Right.
We almost sort of get used to this. Of course, there's going to be a rally on Ohio Union, you know, with 50,000 people and Bruce Springsteen and the candidate. You know, that doesn't happen in a lot of other parts of the country. Ohio's the ultimate swing state. Everybody knows that literally around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the impact that we have, we almost sometimes, I think, take our status for granted. And we have the highest ranking Republican in the country who, you know, lives here and represents one of the districts here in Ohio. And so at some level, you'd almost wonder if folks in other parts of the state even realize that. So it's good, I think, for Ohioans to see this national leader, this incredibly important voice in our party, you know, in his home district, you know, and you know, working as hard as I know that he's working. And so, you know, because we're always the, you know, the talk of national politics, sometimes I think that gets a little lost. If John Boehner had been from South Carolina or you know, Nevada or Utah or some other state, you know, he'd probably be the single most, you know, important you know, political figure in the whole state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here he's one of many. But the reality is, in Washington and nationally, he's an extraordinarily important figure, and Ohioans should be thankful that he's doing the job that he's doing.
Are you concerned about the exit of so many moderate Republicans from Congress over the past 10 years? Who would self-identify as a moderate Republican? How many of them have said, hey, this isn't my party anymore. I can't operate here anymore. No one wants to talk. No one wants to get anything done.
Yeah.
A lot of them have been very open about it.
You know, I guess I wouldn't consider, you know, I would just, you know, take issue and that's been, you know, an overwhelming issue with our delegation, with our party.
In Ohio, perhaps, but.
You know, and you look at the Ohio delegation, we've got such incredibly strong, we are so fortunate in Ohio. Again, not only do we have the Speaker of the House as one of our members, we've got members like Pat Tiberi, you know, new members like Bill Johnson, a great member who will be reelected in 2014 from Northeast Ohio named Dave Joyce, who are up and coming leaders, you know, in this party, in this state, in this country. Bob Gibbs holds a committee chairmanship. You know, we're very blessed. We're very fortunate to have a great group of Republicans, and sure, they run the spectrum. You know, and that's good because that's Ohio. You know, we are as diverse of a state, you know, as the country is. So it's good that we have a representation that kind of, you know, goes across the board. And I can't remember a single member of our delegation, you know, leave the party or decide not to run.
I'm talking about Washington in general. But John Green, do you agree with Matt Borges that the Ohio Republican Party, at least the delegates from Ohio, are run the gamut?
Well, I think they are pretty diverse, and I think that reflects the nature of Ohio. You know, David Joyce from Northeastern Ohio has to run a little bit different kind of campaign and maybe have a little bit different positions on the issue than, say, Speaker Boehner from Southwestern Ohio. But I see your point. Outside of Ohio, particularly in places like New England and the West Coast, there has been an exodus of more moderate representatives, but perhaps more importantly, more moderate voters. And some of that has to do with just the difficulties of building a coalition. And the Democrats have the same kind of problem, you know, in a little different way, of course, because they're a different party, as the Republicans have. And, you know, a lot of the moderates are frankly dissatisfied with everybody. I mean, they're unhappy, perhaps, with the rightward, what they perceive as the rightward drift of the Republican Party on some issues, but they're not that happy with the Democrats either, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe on other issues. So, you know, the part of the moderates leaving the parties has a lot to do with the rise of the independent voters and this sense that somehow those individuals are not being well represented. And Matt makes a really good point, which is everybody agrees that the biggest problem is in Washington. You know, there might be problems in Ohio and Nevada and California, but the biggest problems are in Washington.
Does an element like the Tea Party strengthen an outsider element like that in what it's been doing consistently, I think, for 4 to 6 years? I mean, there's been a presence that some people didn't think would last very long. Do they strengthen a party like the Republican Party? Is the Democrat Party weaker for not having these kinds of challenges, John Green?
Well, you know, it kind of goes in cycles. And generally the party that doesn't hold the White House is the one that has the biggest debate and, you know, oftentimes some real fireworks. And, you know, long term, I think these kinds of challenges do strengthen parties. Because parties were able to build broader coalitions, they're able to make adjustments and be more effective. The party that's in power doesn't, you know, in this case, it's, you know, with President Obama, it's the Democrats, they tend to mute those kinds of arguments because, after all, they're in power. They can do things that nobody wants to mess with success. So we do see these cycles. And when the Democrats have been out of power in the past, we've seen similar types of arguments, between more liberal and progressive groups and more centrist Democrats. But in the short run, these disputes can cause lots of trouble because people get angry with each other. Sometimes the best candidates aren't chosen for general elections, and other problems ensue. So I think there's a kind of long-term, short-term perspective here.
So lucky you, Matt Borges, you get to be in charge of the Republican Party in Ohio during a period of a little bit of unrest. But what do you make of the long-term impact on the party with these challenges?
Well, first, I'd only take issue with the notion that this isn't happening on the Democratic side. It very much is. You've seen in Ohio with the Ohio Democrats, actually two county elected officials, one suing the other for a seat on their state central committee. There was a good series of pieces done in the Cincinnati Enquirer over the weekend by Chrissy Thompson, one on the Republican side, one on the Democratic side, where Democrats, a lot of liberals in Cincinnati are upset about the choice of John Cranley, the more conservative mayor, down there. And so this dynamic is happening on both sides.
But it doesn't have a name.
Great. good point. I don't think that there isn't robust discussion on both sides of the party. Look, there's no question. Our party, you can criticize the Democrats, and certainly folks in our part, and Tom Z and I can get together and criticize the Democrats all we want to. One thing we can't say, I don't agree with really any of their policies. One thing you can't say about them is that they haven't been bold. They've gone out and done big, bold things. This party, our party, needs to be about big, bold ideas again, where we were about freedom and the spread of freedom around the world and when we were at our most successful. Right now, we need to be talking to Americans and to Ohioans specifically about jobs, certainly about our record on jobs, and about, restoring that American dream and offering folks a hand up instead of a hand out. And really, the fundamental differences between us and them, when it comes to how we attack, some of these issues. And that's why in a state where, we're outnumbered in this state, there are more registered Democrats, significantly more, hundreds of thousands of more Democrats than Republicans. And yet we've swept four of the last five statewide tickets. And, I'm sorry, that is not a coincidence. That is because we put forward better candidates who have better ideas, who do better jobs in the offices that they hold. And, the results are pretty undeniable.
John Green, what is it about Ohio? What do you make of that they do have the Republicans have swept statewide offices for years now, it seems like, just a blip back there a few years ago with Ted Strickland. And yet, it's still a swing state when it comes to the nationals.
Well, one of the features of swing states is that political organization, the quality of candidates, and the way that issues are presented really matters. And, one of the interesting things about Ohio is that when both sides are evenly matched in those ways, elections tend to be very close. But if you look at our history, if one party is able to do a better job in the basic campaign organization and campaign politics, they often can win big. And, just in recent times, we've seen two good examples of that. In 2006, the Democrats swept in, elected a governor, did very, very well. And then just 4 years later, we saw a swing in the Republican direction. A lot of this has to do with circumstances, of course, but much of it has to do with the quality of politics. And in a state like Ohio, both sides, if they want to be successful over the long run, they have to do a good job in recruiting candidates, organizing, and maintaining campaigns. And, for the last couple of decades, frankly, the Republicans have done a little bit better job in that area. And in a swing state, it doesn't take a whole lot, to make a big difference because the electorate's so evenly divided.
John Green, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
John Green, he's director of the Institute of Applied Politics at the University of Akron. And Matt Borges, thanks for joining us as well.
Thanks for having me.
Matt is the chairman of the Ohio Republican Party. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.